Well, let me tell you something. Alexandra Robbins, our guest, we're talking about the overachievers, the secret lives of driven kids. We'll be back with her and much more on Coast to Coast AM. As you were following these nine students, did any of them simply lose it on any given moment?
Let's see. Yeah. Well, three of them ended up having suicidal thoughts.
Are you kidding me?
No. And that's not, you know, you'll hear people say that the suicide rate is going down, and that's fine. That's from people who take these surveys. But the number of students who have suicidal thoughts or who consider attempting suicide is still relatively high. And that's a problem. If this pressure is causing so many students to be anxious and overwhelmed and stressed to the point where they're thinking about suicide, that's a huge problem.
Did they share that with you?
Yes, they did.
I mean, you then automatically have to become a therapist. What do you do? I mean, do you report them to their parents? Do you tell a teacher? That's pretty dangerous.
Well, two of the three told me about having suicidal thoughts before I started following them. That is, they had the thoughts not at the time they told me. They were flashing back for me. One of them, I did what I could, and he's fine. All of them are fine, I should say. Nobody should be worried about them. But the fact that it was that bad for them really made me sad.
Were any of these three on any kind of mood-altering drugs or pharmaceuticals or anything like that that you know of?
Meaning prescription drugs?
Yes,
or,
yes.
Yes.
All of them?
No.
Okay. One of them. Two of them.
One of them, yeah.
I won't ask you who, obviously. You know,
okay.
You're not going to tell me anyway.
No.
And I don't want to do that to them. But so one out of three.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to probably guess all three, to tell you the truth, only because we've heard so many horror stories about that.
Sure.
Well, these pressures that they're under, why do they go through it? Why don't they simply say, hey, I'm going to work at my own pace. What happens, happens. And that's the way it is. I guess because they're young, they just don't have the strength to do that?
Because they're not taught that you can do that. You get so caught up in this frenzy at school to get ahead. It's really this atmosphere of cutthroat competition where parents and students often feel like they have to do whatever they can to gain an edge in school, to get ahead in the race. You know, kids aren't taught to love learning. They're taught to find loopholes. They're choosing classes not by their appeal or their interest in a subject, but rather by how they look on their college application or how a class can boost their class rank. Because families are often placing a high importance on class rank in their really their quest to land at a top college, there have been a number of cases recently in which families have sued school districts to get their child the valedictorian title. I mean, it's really hard. I'm so glad I'm not in high school anymore because it's really hard for kids and I think parents too.
Do they still take SATs for college?
Oh yeah,
they do. So they haven't changed.
No, and frankly, I believe that the SAT is a flawed, biased, useless, ridiculous test with no predictive value. It earns millions of dollars for the College Board, which is the company that runs it. And by the way, the College Board is also behind the advanced placement classes around the country, too.
Tell us how you really feel.
I don't mince words with you, George.
No, you don't. So there's a private company,
yes,
that puts this on.
A private, non-elected group that's basically dictating curriculum. And in fact, it was reported that the mission of the College Board, when it changed the SAT to the new SAT, and that new test debuted in March 2005, its mission, supposedly, was to get schools to teach to the test. And for me, the bottom line is that the learning experience should not come down to a series of test scores. But teenagers learn that they're judged by their numbers, and that's a terrible way to have to form an identity. Standardized tests in general have been proven to be flawed. They're biased against minorities. They reward superficial temporary memorization rather than deep learning. They're designed to be cheap. They're designed to be quickly administrated, quickly scored. And there have been heaps of cases in which mistakes on the tests have wrongly dropped students' scores. I mean, look at what happened just this year with the SAT. Thousands of students' SATs were scored incorrectly. And by the time the mistakes were discovered, the deadline for college applications on many scholarship programs had passed. It was an absolute disaster.
I'm trying to remember when I was taking my SATs back in 1968. If I remember correctly, the person putting on the test said, try not to leave anything blank. As we get close to the end of the time, just fill them in if you have to. And I used to remember that going, well, what if they're all wrong? But, you know, they figure they're going to be wrong anyway if you don't fill it out. So you might as well guess, and maybe you'll hit one out of four.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and that was crazy. This private company, private in that it's not part of a public school system, do you know, though, if it's a publicly held stock-type company, or is it a privately owned? Do you know that?
It's an interesting company. It's made up of thousands of educators at various levels.
I mean, somebody owns it, right?
Somebody owns it, sure.
That's what I want to find out, who owns this thing. We'll probably find out.
Interesting to look a little more into that.
I bet you find out it's a group of fat former politicians. You know what? Who are just lining their pockets.
Wouldn't surprise me.
That is interesting. And this has been going on then for at least 40 years, maybe way before my time, right?
Sure. And I think the tide is just beginning to turn. There are more and more colleges now who are saying, you know what, you don't need to submit your SAT or ACT scores with your application because we can figure out who to admit without that information. And so I think it's a good thing that a lot of colleges are starting to turn against that.
And maybe they lose revenue then from this. Does this company donate money to any of the schools?
I don't know. It certainly makes a lot of money. It costs money to take the test. It costs money to send your scores to more than a certain number of schools.
It's a racket.
I think so. This company many times claimed that you can't coach for the SATs, and yet the company itself puts out this mammoth 800-something page book that's basically a practice guide for the SATs. So they're making money on their own test prep materials for the test that they say you can't prep for. I mean, it's very silly.
Why can't just your school grades be, you know, your transcripts? Why can't they be strong enough to get you into college?
What I think. I think between grades and activities and teacher recommendations and guidance counselors, that should be enough. And there have been schools like Bates, for example, in Maine, that for 20 years now, more than 20 years, has not required, it's been optional to submit your standardized test scores. And they've been thrilled with the results. They more than doubled their applicant pool. They're finding that instead of weeding students out who would otherwise have been great students for their school, except they didn't want to apply because they were worried their test scores were too low, that doesn't happen anymore. So they're not deterring students from applying because of test scores. And they've been very happy with the results.
Bottom line, if you have a check, won't the university get you in?
Oh, gosh, that depends on the university.
Yeah. But that does happen.
I'm sure.
You know, people, you know, weasel their way in. Rodney Dangerfield did that in a movie.
Back to school.
Thornton Melton, right? Mellon, Thornton Mellon, that was his name. Back to school, wrote a check, and got in. And the dean loved him. Dean Martin. Yep, sure was. Sure. And I bet this happens all the time. So money is a prerequisite, I think, for a lot of this. In the book Overachievers, what did you come away with? What was your biggest feeling?
I think my biggest feeling is that families need to relax. There are so many colleges in this country. Very few actually practice selective admission. The vast majority are overjoyed when decent students apply, and that doesn't even count the community colleges and the schools abroad. The hype over selective colleges it carries over from past eras, but the truth is that plenty of schools that aren't traditionally considered prestigious have caught up, probably passed the top-ranked schools in terms of quality of education and student satisfaction. And moreover, for the young adults who are listening tonight, and I know there are a lot of you because you've emailed me,
yeah.
This perfectionist atmosphere can carry over into the world after school, in that 20-somethings and 30-somethings often think that they have to either become a great success or they're nothing, and that self-satisfaction isn't enough. And our generation, and I can relate to this too, has been so ingrained with the idea of becoming a success that, as I said before, we're afraid to take risks. We're afraid to fail. We have difficulty making decisions. And a lot of that can be traced back to overachiever culture. And you need to know that success is so narrowly defined that it's silly. What success really is, and I know I've said this, but it's important, is the pursuit of your individual interests and personal happiness, and that's it. And regardless of where you go to college or what you decide to do in your career, you're going to be just fine.
And how many of them, when they become adults, because of this overachiever scenario, push themselves to get the best car, maybe the nice house, all the nice clothes, and then they find themselves trying to keep up with the Joneses, and they just can't do it.
That's right. It's this idea of comparison that begins in school when you want to get better grades than the person next to you and better test scores. And as CJ said, you want to be the best dressed, and you want to be having the most fun, and you want to appear the happiest. I mean, it's so much pressure these days.
I used to think that putting kids in uniforms was crazy, but I'm not sure anymore, Alexandra. I think it balances the playing field. You know, the kids that can't afford the nice tennis shoes, the kids that can't afford all the nice clothes, put everybody in the same uniform and let them be equal at least. I think that would help a lot.
That's an interesting debate. You know, I can see both sides. On one hand, I think it would help. On the other hand, I think kids should be free to express their individuality and their creativity through what they wear. But
yeah, but is it the kids expressing their individuality, or is it the parents because they want their kid to look expensive?
Or, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the parents are probably saying, I want the teachers to know I'm successful.
Right.
So I'm going to give my kid the nicest clothes and turn him loose.
Yeah, a lot of parents are playing out their dreams and their hopes through their kids. And, for example, if they didn't get to go to a very good college, they're pushing their kids to do it. Or if they didn't make it in the professional sports world, they're pushing their kids in the sports arena because they think that they can live out their dream through their kids. It's really hard on kids today.
What were some of the things that these 9 kids didn't like the most? What bothered them the most?
Well, let's see. If I had to pick one thing that many of them felt the same about, it would probably be that they're judged by their scores, and they felt like they were nothing more in school than their numbers. They were cogs in a wheel, and nobody really cared what their character was or whether they cheated or not. And all that mattered was that in the end they got an acceptance to a good college. And they really lamented that because, as Julie says in the book, she wrote this essay about my life in numbers, and she points out that she felt that a lot of times her life as a track star came down to the numbers she got in a race, and her life as an academic came down to the numbers she got on her tests. And I think a lot of kids feel that way.
Did some of them cheat?
Yeah.
They admitted it, or you found out?
Oh no, they were really, I mean, they were so wonderful. They bared their souls to me. They told me, and they told me sometimes as they were doing it. As an example, one of the characters, he had 4 tests in one day, and he had projects going on. It was really too much, and he was so overwhelmed that for one of his projects, he was supposed to interview a Muslim. He was supposed to find a Muslim somewhere and interview that Muslim. And he realized that the project was due in 12 hours, and he didn't have a Muslim, so it was late at night, and he decided he was going to make up a Muslim. So he made up Rahim, and he wrote all about Rahim, and he wrote the 1,400-word fake interview. And he was feeling pretty badly about it. But then he went on Instant Messenger, which all the high school kids do, and he trolled his friends away messages to see what other people were up to. Mm-hmm. And he estimated that about 2/3 of his classmates were also making up their Muslims because many of them had Instant Messenger away messages that said, for example, and this is verbatim, I need a name for my fake Muslim and fast.
Oh, my. Yeah, so all of a sudden you also get a perception, right or wrong, about what this individual might have been.
90% of high school students cheat. You know, at first that statistic surprised me, but when you think about it, it's not that surprising when you consider that the majority of schools, I think it's about 81% of public schools, still have class rank, which means if one student cheats to get A pluses, the others often feel like they have to do the same thing just so they don't fall behind the curve. And you think, why do they feel the need to cheat? And the inescapable atmosphere of cutthroat competition, why does that push them so hard? Here's an interesting statistic. Nearly 50% of college students report that they had an A average in high school. I mean, boy, can you imagine trying to keep up with that?
That's pretty tough. You know, I did well in college because I took broadcasting courses. I mean, I took something I liked and I enjoyed, but I had a tough time on some of the other ones. I took 2 years of Spanish. I had one heck of a time trying to get by. And you know how I passed?
How?
In Spanish. Are you ready for this?
You sat next to a native speaker and
no,
ate.
I didn't cheat. I didn't cheat, but I hope you don't think less of me. The Spanish professor broke his leg, and I used to go and help him into his car. And at the age of, gosh, I must have been 20, I bought him a margarita. And I didn't drink it, of course. But he loved me, and he gave me a great passing mark of a B. And honestly, in Spanish, I think I might have been a D student.
Well, I guess you learned the word margarita at least.
Yeah. You also learn something in business, and in everything else. You learn that sometimes if you befriend someone, they tend to be a little easier on you.
That's right.
You know, because
right.
It was interesting. But I did that. I was a kid, a 19, 20-year-old kid. And, you know, to this day, I mean, I tried, and I tried to study, but I had a tough time with Spanish. God, I just admitted that to millions of people. It's not that bad, is it?
No. A lesson to all you young people listening. If you're failing a class, buy your teacher a drink.
Buy your teacher a drink and help him limp to his car.
There you go.
And get him in. And would that have made me an overachiever?
No, that would have made you pretty darn clever.
Good. Where do you go with this book? What happens? I mean, you're going to hit the circuit. People are going to be listening to what you have to say. Is anybody going to do anything about it?
I hope so. I have a lot of recommendations. I have pages and pages of suggestions for counselors, for schools, for parents, for students, for colleges. And I do think that we can change this attitude towards school, and we can turn it around. And some people think that's naive, but I think it's optimistic. And I've already gotten so many emails from parents and students and teachers who are reading this book and realize that they can change the way they think. And, you know, the best emails I get are from people like, I just got an email from a student who says that he was pushing himself, and he's a junior in high school now, and now he's going to change the way he thinks about high school because he realizes it doesn't matter whether or not he gets into a top college. So he is going to focus on learning about subjects he's interested in high school and not putting so much pressure on himself.
One day, you may have a child that is going to high school. What will you tell them about all this?
I'm going to tell them that it doesn't matter where you go to college, that instead of doing what a lot of families do, which is basically trying to retool a student to match a college, I'm going to help my children someday find schools that match them. I think there's a huge difference, and they're going to be fine. I'm just not going to worry about it because often, you know, there are a lot of students who feel, for example, and parents who feel that their kid has to go to Harvard, and I'm holding Harvard up because that's where AP Frank's mother told him he had to go. He went to the college of her choice, so I follow him through his first year at Harvard. Well, I interviewed the chief of mental health services at Harvard, and he told me that 45% of undergraduates there are depressed. For me, I'd rather have a happy kid not at Harvard than a depressed kid at Harvard.
Yeah, with minimal pressure. And I don't mean pressure to react under trying times, because I think that's important. But I mean pressure to perform when they shouldn't have to.
That's right. And I don't mean to pick on Harvard. This is going on all over the place. That's just an example because that's where one of the characters.
Yeah, but you went to Yale, didn't you?
Yeah, and you know what? So
you're probably a Skull and Bones member, and you're not telling us.
No, George. I was Skrull and Key.
All right. Hey, we're up to another half hour. We're going to have fast blast questions for you next. And then next hour, full phone calls with our special guest, Alexandra Robbins. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, are you interested in the After Dark newsletter? Read all about some of the great stories following Coast to Coast guests. You get 14 issues for the price of 12. You can call 1-888-727-5505 or go online, safe and secure, at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're going to take some of your fast blast questions now for Alexandra. Alexandra, Joe from Ontario says that they don't take SAT type tests in Canada, and it seems like their university system is working well. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there are a lot of better things about the educational system in Canada, and they do seem to have a lot of fine schools, and I think a lot of U.S. students are beginning to realize that they should apply to Canadian universities too.
How do we compare university-wise or high school-wise with other schools in other countries outside of Canada? Let's say in Europe.
That's a great question. I think a lot of people try to compare by test scores, but I don't think that's the whole picture. I think you really have to look at student satisfaction. I think there should be more polling of students during their college tenure and afterwards to try and see, okay, well, what can we do better as a university? What can we fix? Where are we lagging behind?
Lori from Westbury, New York. George, my husband and I failed Spanish in high school with 35%. He is 6 years my senior, but we went to the same school, had the same teacher, failed with the same grade. He failed French as well. We are both very successful professionals today. So what does that tell you?
It tells you a point that I agree with, is that it doesn't really matter. And, you know, if they cared that much about their grades, maybe they should have bought their teacher margaritas.
Julian wants to know, look, I'm not getting great grades. I want to be a pilot. Should I be worried? Well, you know, he's got a concern. Should he be an overachiever?
I don't think you need to be an overachiever. I think you need to study what you need to study to get where you want to be in life. The point is, do you learn the material, and are you setting yourself up for the career that you want? If you want to be a pilot, and I honestly don't know specifically what the track is for pilots, but I mean, you talk. I think the best thing to do is to talk to pilots who could tell you about how they got to where they are and what they did.
What do you think of homeschooling?
I think it depends. I think the socialization factor of being in school is important, but if you're homeschooled, then you don't have to deal with a standardized test mess, and you don't have to worry about teachers teaching to a test and losing out on potential subjects of interest. I mean, today we don't have classes where students can learn about things they might observe, or a student might see something in current events and want to talk about it, but teachers are often so harried that because they have to teach to a particular test that they don't have time to address those concerns. Homeschooling, I guess, is a different alternative that could address those concerns.
What was the high school that you went to? Where was it? And do you give the name of your high school?
I do. It was in Maryland, Walt Whitman High School.
And was it a good high school?
Yes.
Economics, middle class, upper class, what was it?
Probably upper middle. It's a pretty,
public, private?
Public.
Public school. Did any of these nine children that you followed around, youngsters followed around, did they come from bad families, broken families, alcoholic families, drug families?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, not all of them were your traditional nuclear family, and certainly not all of them were upper middle class.
The pressures that they were under, would you categorize it as being, I guess maybe on a 1 to 10, where would you put it overall?
I think it depends on the student. The pressure on Frank was enormous. He and his brother, this was their day.
That's AP Frank, right?
AP Frank, that's right. They would come home from school And they would have to go to their desks in their rooms, and their mother would sit in a chair in the hallway and watch them while they studied. And they weren't allowed to get up, you know, unless they had to go to the bathroom quickly or something.
She'd sit there and watch them?
And she watched them.
Didn't she have a life?
Apparently not. They were her life. And that even if they went downstairs to get a glass of orange juice, if they delayed for too long, she would reel them back in. They weren't allowed to play sports because she believed that wouldn't lead them to a career in medicine or law. They weren't allowed to do extracurriculars except for perhaps the math team. They weren't allowed to watch television except for the evening news, maybe a half-hour break or so. They weren't allowed to chat with friends. They were discouraged from going out and playing with friends. And the drama in their story really comes to a head at a couple points with their mother in the book, but I won't spoil it for you.
No, but this is the one that hit the kid, right?
Yes.
Man, she should be put away for that.
I think generally it's not even just what's going on in school. The pressure to succeed is really affecting kids. It's in that kids aren't really allowed to be kids anymore. They're like adults in training. They're over-tested and over-stressed. You have 8-year-olds who have day planners, 6-year-olds who go around saying they're stressed. 2-year-olds have resumes. Some 2-year-olds even have syllabi for playtime that their parents create. Students are really losing their childhoods because they're pushed to invest in and make decisions about their future while they're still just kids. I think leisure's dead, and I think that childhood sort of got lost sometime over the last few years.
Let's talk about cost. Let's talk about the child who doesn't get a scholarship. You graduate from high school. If you get a good trade job, of course, the old automobile field isn't like it used to be, but if you get a good trade job, I mean, you hit the deck running, you're making some money, and hopefully you're saving it. A kid who goes to a 4-year college, by the time he comes out, unless his parents help him or her, he's got a pretty big bill that
That's
he's
right.
got to start paying.
That's right.
He may never whittle out of that hole.
That's right. And one thing that I recommend is it's okay to take a year off or to encourage your child to take a year off between high school and college and just get a job and really think about what he or she wants to do in life, make a little bit of money. And then when you're ready to go to college, then you have a better sense of who you are and what you want to study so that by the time you come out of college, you have a degree that relates to something that you can make a living off of and might enjoy making a living off of in the future.
How about vocational or trade schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's not enough emphasis put on them. Some high schools in this country, they send out a list or they post in a newsletter or something, or they announce over the school PA system when students get into swanky colleges. And often the vocational schools are ignored. But it's funny because if one of those kids becomes, for example, a celebrity hairdresser someday, then that school is going to trumpet that kid as an alumni of the school. I think that there's not enough attention paid to vocational schools, and they're really important, and they can be just as the kids who go through there can be just as successful, if not more successful, than 4-year college grads.
I was 19 years old. I got my first job in broadcasting while I was going to college in my second year, and they wanted to work me so much that I had to start taking my college courses at night when I worked full-time in broadcasting. And I had to reduce my credit schedule over the last 2.5 years. But I got my degree in 4 years because I went during the summer sometimes. My father thought I was going to quit college. So as a promise to him, I said, no, Dad, I'm going to get my bachelor's degree. Don't worry about that. But I learned more working at a broadcast station than I ever would getting that 4-year degree. And to me, there's nothing like the real world.
That's right.
And people need to understand that. There's nothing wrong with just going out and following what you want to do in your life and doing it.
That's right.
Can't be a doctor, but you can still have a nice living.
That's absolutely right.
Another fast blast here. Kyle from California says, I was enrolled in courses nearly all the same with my classmates for 4 years, but in one class, the students began cheating on their homework assignments because the answers were posted online.
Aww.
We only cared about the grade. Who's to blame? Who's to blame when a kid cheats?
Oh, that's a great question. What's interesting is that a lot of students say, there have been surveys on this, that they they have learned that in the real world, people have to lie, cheat, and claw their way to the top to succeed sometimes, and that's sort of a standard MO. So many students feel like that starts in school, that you have to cheat to get your way to the top, that it doesn't really matter how you get there as long as you get that A in the end. And that's also an interesting point. We're not just talking about D students cheating to get Cs. We're talking about A students cheating to get A pluses. It is an epidemic in this country.
A students cheating to get A plus. So
that's right.
Those are real overachievers.
Absolutely.
They're pushed to the brink.
Yeah, a lot of kids are pushed to the brink, if not over it, in this day and age, in today's schools, and that really has to change.
Do you find that teachers are pushing them too far, too?
Teachers are pushing them far, but teachers are also pushed themselves. And, you know, I mentioned that a lot of teachers are cheating on standardized tests because they are held accountable for their teachers' scores. But also, some teachers told me that they're specifically instructed to cater to their school's top students, bumping up their grades, for example, so that the students have a better shot at the Ivy League, because then the school looks better, the more Ivy League grads it can produce, and then property value goes up in the area, and all of this comes back to the teachers. So it's pressure not only on students, but on teachers and administrators as well.
What about their health, the students' health? You know, you talked about those three that contemplated doing themselves in. But I mean, overall, physically, because they push and strive, do they get sick more often than most kids? What happens to them?
Yeah, students told me about everything from having digestive problems to getting ulcers to getting sick, losing sleep. One of the girls I spoke to in Kentucky, because I didn't just follow 8 students, I interviewed students all across America, and a student I spoke to in Kentucky was under such pressure to succeed that she turned to eating disorders to cope, and that's how she tried to relieve her stress, and she got to a dangerously unhealthy point. Or Audrey, for example. Audrey is the perfectionist in the book. She's consumed by getting everything done to the absolute best it can be. And for Audrey, there just wasn't enough time in the day to get everything done and to wake up in time for classes that began at 7:25 in the morning, which is another topic I can go into. But in Audrey's junior year, she became so sleep-deprived that after 2.5 years of never missing a day of high school, not one day, she suddenly became ill and had to take several sick days. And she's an example of why high schools should delay their start times.
She broke down.
She broke down. And because of teenagers' sleep cycles, people don't understand this. Waking up for classes that begin before 8 a.m. is comparable to an adult waking up for work at 3 a.m. And I know there are a lot of adults listening right now who do wake up for work at 3 a.m. However, teenagers need 9.25 hours of sleep a night to function on average, which is a lot more than adults need. Experts told me that teenagers are the most sleep-deprived age group in the country. And one thing we can do to help them is to delay high school start times, but a lot of high schools aren't doing that yet.
Whatever happened to Taylor, the one that you call the hottie? I mean, did she end up just riding through life because of her looks, or did she really have to try? What happened to her?
Well, I don't want to spoil her plot, but
she was not
a coaster. She worked hard. Her issue in the book is her struggle with the duality between being that popular girl and hanging out with the popular crowd, and being the person that played this role in school. But on the other hand, she also had a lot of smart friends who were in different circles at school. She was tugged in different directions. On one hand, she was a smart girl. Good at math, good at science, wanted to be motivated, but she didn't want to lose her popular friends because of it.
In my day, there were greasers and frats. And then in my kids' days, there were burnouts and I guess whatever they were. And has that changed now? Do they change terminologies all the time?
I think terminologies change, and that's why I dub these students by, you know, as the slacker or the flirt or the meathead. There are just labels. I mean, that's something that hasn't changed in high school. People are labeled, and then they're almost judged by how they fit or don't fit in that label. And that's hard on kids to try and put them into a box at such an early age.
Patty writes, many of our good-paying jobs, and she's right, are simply leaving the country. How can young people earn a decent living without college when manufacturing jobs are leaving? Well, I'm not even sure college jobs are good jobs for a lot of kids. So what do they do? I mean, this is a big problem where manufacturing is going to Mexico, it's going to China, and all of a sudden this country is finding itself in one heck of a dilemma.
Yeah, it is a problem, and it sort of doesn't make sense to me. If the government is really that invested in making the U.S. a global superpower, then why don't they focus on what's going on in the U.S. rather than focusing so much on what's going on in other countries?
Robert from Los Angeles says, George, I'm 25. I'm still going to college. I've been doing it since I was 18. I feel lost, depressed, because I have no idea what I want to do in my life. It scares me when I think that I feel like I'm the ultimate underachiever. Well, I don't think he's an underachiever, do you?
No, because you're addressing these problems. I'll give you a quick tip for figuring out what you want to do with your life. It's Fastpass, so I know I have to be quick. But one thing is to think of, okay, if you won the lottery, millions of dollars, and you never had to work again, you think to yourself, okay, well, how would I spend my time? Would I be shopping? Would I be at the gym? Would I be playing sports? Would I be cooking? Would I be gardening? And you really, and this can take a while, but you really stop to think about the kinds of things you like to do. Once you have a long list of that, you look at those things, and so many jobs are out there that can be based on things you like to do as hobbies, you know. And this goes into what I was saying before about this very narrow definition of success that our society seems to promote, as if you're not a lawyer or a doctor, as A.P. Frank's mother said you have to be, then you're a failure. No, there are so many jobs out there that you don't hear about in college. And I promise you that things you like to do as hobbies, things that truly give you enjoyment, are out there to make a living.
Here's one of the problems, too. Overachievers may find themselves, when they're 50 years old, at the peak of their career, and guess what, Alexandra? They get laid off, and they find themselves 50 years old, and they can't find work.
Sure.
And that's a problem. I've got some friends in St. Louis. This has happened to them. They were either outsourced or they were replaced by younger kids, younger people who came in at $20,000 instead of the $50 or $55 they were making. And they're having a real tough time finding anything. What do these people do who maybe pushed themselves when they were young, who did overachieve, hit some plateau of a pretty good position, and now it's gone? Their lifestyle's over. What do they do?
That's a tough one. I mean, that's why I'm encouraging young people to figure out who you really are behind your achievements. You know, you're not your SAT score. You're not your GPA. You're not the name of the college that you graduated from. It's so much more than that. And that's why it's so important at a young age to start pursuing your personal interests and not try to live up to somebody else's expectations.
You know, there's your next book, following a number of Americans who have been laid off from their job and see how they can get by in America right now.
Not a bad idea.
No, it isn't, because I think housing prices, I think everything is going to start to plummet other than gasoline prices. You know, things that we buy will go down, but other than gasoline, because they're going to always inflate that.
Right.
Next Fast Blast question comes from Kelly in Pasadena, California. I always loved ancient coins and then managed to work for a dealer I bought from, and now I have much respect. I make good money researching and selling the coins I love. I work mostly at home, and I'm now working on my master's as well. Now, here's somebody who took a passion, and it's a living for them.
Exactly. And you don't, you know, when you go to your high school or college career center, they're not going to have information on jobs like that, but that might be the perfect job for you. So that's really why it's important to figure out what your interests are and then do whatever you need to find something that you can make a living from that's related to that hobby.
Did you ever think you'd be an author writing big books now?
No, that never occurred to me.
It just, I mean, how did that happen for you?
I guess it just sort of happened because I had so much to say and so little space in newspapers. They don't really give you that many words. I really like immersing myself in a culture and getting to know people and then sharing those people's voices with their readership. So that's how I got into
that. I'm going to paraphrase a Fast Blast from Linda in Montana that simply says, I love to jog. And I was jogging past a warehouse and realized that they had finally closed down and moved overseas. What a disappointment. Sign of the times, Alexandra.
Unfortunately.
Stay with us. Final hour to go. Now it's your turn. We're going to open up the phone lines. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.